very busy. Many important matters require a king's attention.
I'm king now. King now.
I am king.
I am
king.
I am
kiss it.
I am
kiss it again.
I am
your fingers or your king doesn't
fingers
discuss
your
battle plans.
I am
stupid girl.
Your fingers or your tongue.
I am
the king. I'm telling mother.
Welcome to the Joffria podcast. My name's Bubba, and with me, as always, is Catfish. Catfish, how are you doing?
Woo! I was feeling bad.
Do you need Melisandre to give you the oil of Olay?
What I like
chest
to call
massage.
Double M's. Melisandre ministrations.
Okay.
And now I am feeling sharp.
Oh, Catfish, we have got to get right to it.
Let's do it.
Was something people have been wanting, people have been expecting for months and months and months. It feels like a full friggin' year. What is your rating for Home, a.k.a. the episode where Jon Snow's body came home? What are you going to give it?
So I'm going to bifurcate my rating.
Okay.
I'm going to give this a 9.
9?
For most listeners and people who aren't in the know.
Yeah.
For people who are in the know, I've got to give this a 0.
Whoa!
Because Joffrey was the one who was supposed to be resuscitated.
Well, Catfish.
They're not following the books at all.
Catfish, that means the show officially gets a yes, for anyone who can barely hear that on the podcast, that is the shame bell, or as I should say, the shame bell has had Melisandre kind of rub it. And so now, going forward, our shame bell currently will now sound like
shame.
Shame.
I thought for sure we weren't going to use that bell.
Okay.
Well, I thought this was, you know, as I said last week, I usually feel like there's too much setup in the first 4 episodes, and
mm-hmm.
I like the setup, but I start to enjoy it less and less.
Mm-hmm.
This was a revelation to have Jon Snow come back. Thrilling.
Okay.
Amazing.
They're right. Sure.
I'm a little concerned.
Little concerned.
That people who are just show watchers who've only seen this happen with one person.
Yeah, back in season 3 when the Red Priest Thoros of Mir,
right,
who was hanging out with the Brotherhood, he brought back Beric Dondarrion, and he said he had brought him back 6 times.
Boom. The guy likes to die. You know why? He's such a hard worker. It's the only time he gets to rest.
And he can't just die once. You know what I mean? It's like Doritos.
So this happened, and I don't want to give it away, more than once in the book. So this is kind of set up.
Okay.
It happens to a main character, actually, in the books. So I wonder if people who only watch the show think it's kind of a cheat.
Oh, Interesting. Well, we're going to get to some feedback at the end of this episode, possibly, or if we go long, as we're wont to do, we're going to test something where we break off the feedback into its own separate podcast, which will come out in the middle of the week.
Whoa. That is twice the amount of Joffrey of podcast.
That's right.
You know, we are doing we're doing the Lord's work. And when I say Lord, I mean Joffrey.
Thank you. Okay. So now, Catfish, since you asked me, let me tell you my ranking for this episode. Now, do you remember what I gave the season premiere of season 6, Catfish?
Yeah, I do, because especially when you say 6 really loud, you gave it a 6.
I did. And so for this episode,
mm-hmm.
you thought for the rest of the season you might come down and I might go up. Well, Catfish, I am going up, but I'm only going up one solitary notch. Oh, my goodness.
You're only going up to 7?
I'm going to give this 7 what I like to call triple B's out of 10.
Triple B?
Yeah, well, Catfish, triple B is what I like to refer to when I talk about bringing bastards back.
Bringing bastards back.
You know, when I have to bring a bastard back, okay, am I supposed to say all 3 words and all those syllables? No, I just say triple B. Everybody knows what I talk about.
Okay.
And so I'm giving it 7 out of 10 because for a lot of the exciting things in this episode, and there
uh-huh.
were exciting like little moments, there were moments which I personally considered anticlimactic. And so the biggest one of all, and we've got to get to it, is sure enough, they brought the bastard back. Jon Snow is back. And to me,
thrilling. Did you not, even though you suspected it,
I suspected it. Yeah, sure.
I more than suspected it.
Right.
I was like 98.5% sure it was going to happen.
Okay.
You still didn't get a frisson of excitement when it happened? Because I certainly got that. I don't know Maybe it was just I was just sitting on something weird, but I got a frisson.
This is going to sound crazy, but I bought into way back in season one, the witch doctor who Daenerys saw kept repeating this phrase, like, only death can pay for life. And I know they didn't use that with Beric Dondarrion in season three when they brought him back. But to me, it felt like it had to be something bigger. It had to be something bigger than chanting and rubbing some stuff on your chest. You know, when you put Vicks Vapor Rub on somebody's chest.
Oh, it's so good. It's so good.
You know, that does, you know, wake them back up.
Mm-hmm.
But for somehow that didn't have the kind of holy crap moment that I expected it to have. And a couple other moments in the episode, we'll get to it in a second, I feel didn't live up to that incredible punch. How do you feel about Jon Snow being back? Are you glad that this character is back, or would you have preferred he stayed dead? What? Let's get to it.
Oh, I will say this. I will say that the fifth book in which this happened...
Which is Death Happened,
right,
Dance with Dragons.
Which is Death Happened, correct. When I heard about that, I was so enraged.
Enraged?
I was enraged because...
Well, you spoiled... You were so enraged you spoiled me about it while we were waiting for George R. R. Martin to sign the books.
Because I have in my mind who I think is going to end up on the Iron Throne.
Could it be?
Well, yes, absolutely. Just that I thought that that it was a bridge too far, of course, not having in my mind about not only Beric Dondarrion,
right,
but another major character who'd been brought back to life.
But they now that they've done it, okay, they have gone a bridge too far, in your opinion.
They had when they killed him, but now that he's back, I'm very excited about it.
Oh, okay, sorry. Because I lost the threat.
Because I feel that he figures strongly in... The battle for the Iron Throne.
For the Iron Throne and not the battle with the people I like to call WWs?
WWs.
White Walkers.
Oh, also that. But I think whoever kills the... Whoever gets together and kills the... You know what? I can say it because it's not out there.
Sure.
It's not a spoiler.
Okay.
I always said, it's the song of ice and fire.
Right.
And I believe that Jon Snow represents ice.
What?
And I believe that Daenerys represents fire.
Don't
so
see it.
So I believe that the two of them are going to get together, and they are going to kill the White Walkers, and then they will end up sharing the Iron Throne.
Yeah, I'm not really sure that seat is really built for two. You know, you got to be thin-waist to have it.
I will say,
when your parents are taking you on a trip and you're in the back seat, it's like somebody forward, somebody back.
I will say that I still believe that Jon Snow is going to end up on it.
Whoa.
But the way that as much time...
You're calling it right now.
As much time as the show has spent, time that's really irritated me and frustrated me with Daenerys, there's no way they spend all that time unless she is part of the solution. So again, I would put money on it.
All right.
A lot of money that it's going to be Jon Snow and Daenerys Targaryen together, king and queen.
All right. Well, we will see. We will see. I guess call me crazy at this point. I don't think about Jon Snow touching his Grace King Joffrey's Iron Throne at all. I think he's good for the battle with the WWs, the White Walkers, and I want to see that. Hard Home, I said at the end of Season 5 that I thought Season 5 was the weakest season overall, but the Battle of Hard Home, I think I gave a 10 out of 10. It was so exciting. It was thrilling. And dare I say it, I need more of that. I need more of that juice. Okay. I need more of that battle like we're used to. Now, these are our opinions. Everybody?
This is the second episode to have an amazing thing happen in the second episode.
No. It did. Okay, fair enough. But amazing things have to carry amazing emotional weight and amazing emotional shock. And so
because there was no double F for you.
Double F.
Frisson feeling.
Edit that from your podcast, everybody. Catfish, what I was saying is that we've talked how you feel about it. We'll talk how I feel about
it. Okay, let's do it.
As we mentioned last week, podcast listeners, we are going up on Periscope live after every show on the East Coast airing. We are live on Periscope.
Wow.
And we want to get your reactions. So in this podcast, we'll try to give you some of your reactions. And then if we don't get them in this podcast, once again, later in the week, we're going to be giving out a second podcast where we do a kind of a full feedback podcast where we talk about things. And hopefully this particular podcast will be under 2 hours. But it may not, because when you bring back a character from the dead, like Jon Snow, you do have to talk about it an awful lot. Before we get into the episode proper, Catfish,
okay.
We always talk about these wonderful, wonderful prizes, these contests, these prizes that we are giving away.
Uh-huh.
And I just want to remind people, there's so many different ways to win. One of the ways
How many are there?
To be honest, at least four.
At least four, okay.
So you can go to Twitter and send out a tweet with the hashtag Joffrey of Podcasts. That's the first way you can get entered to win one of these awesome prizes. The second way is you can go to iTunes and give us a written review, not just click and say this is 5 stars
okay.
or 7 stars, more appropriate for the series. But if you give us a written review, that's the second way you can get entered. We don't look at it too much, but sure enough, people download the podcast on Stitcher. And so if you go to Stitcher and give us a Stitcher review, you can be entered to
Whoa,
win some of these prizes.
Okay, all right. So now I think we're up to 5.
And the more than
No, five. We will be.
Right. And then the final way is you can go to our Facebook page and like the Facebook page. And how do you find that Facebook page, Catfish?
Oh, my goodness. You go on Facebook. You look for the double P. That's the word double.
Yeah.
D-O-U-B-L-E.
That's how it's spelled.
P, and then there's another P for the podcasts.
Plural.
Double P podcasts.
That's facebook.com/doublepodcasts. We have great conversations there. We had a great question last week about what is the fifth favorite thing a Dothraki likes to do,
and
we've got a lot posted there.
We've got a lot of conversation about that we'll be handling in our bonus podcast
feedback
this
podcast this week. If it goes well, maybe we'll do it for the rest of the season. If not, we'll fold feedback into the main podcast, which is this one right here. Catfish, before we get into this episode 2 of season 6 home, I want to ask you a question.
Okay.
Just a couple of questions about the podcast itself. This is
a little inside
baseball to our listeners, but Catfish, which city in the United States gave this podcast the most downloads, a.k.a. which city loves His Grace King Joffrey the most? And let me say, it is not surprising. Can you figure out which city in the United States downloads our podcast the most? And we got to give this city a shout out.
It's not surprising?
Not surprising.
Well, I'm going to be surprised no matter what.
Okay.
Because I'm going to say Mobile, Alabama.
That would be the Senior Bowl. Everybody there for the Senior Bowl just downloads.
It's not Mobile, Alabama.
No. Well, which city famously booed usurpers like Santa Claus, a.k.a. Father Christmas, a.k.a. St. Nick?
Oh, Philadelphia?
Philadelphia downloads this podcast
yeah.
the most. They are the number one city for downloads in the United States. So shout out to Philadelphia. Loves King Joffrey the most.
The Joffrey of cities.
It is. It really, really is. I want to say to our friends in the rest of the world that London actually is the city that gave us the most downloads from one specific city. So shout out to jolly old London.
They are the Joffrey of Europe.
They are. Okay, so let's get into this episode. I gave it 7. You gave it 2 different ratings. I'm going to trust that it was the 9. And so we're going to hold off on the Castle Black stuff until the very end because that's, you know, it's so powerful. And instead, we're going to start all the way in the credits, actually. As you point out, the Iron Islands are suddenly back in the credits.
Yeah, yeah.
But Dorne wasn't in the credits. Do you think that's it for Dorne this season? Or is it just, okay, we're not going to see Dorne for a while? But it was not in the credits anymore.
I believe last week I said we're going to see Dorne a little bit, but not for a while. I thought I said we wouldn't see Dorne for another 4 episodes.
I think that's a good call. And that is definitely what I believe. Catfish, I had you figure this out. Everybody talked about how long the previously on was for the first episode. How long was the previously on for episode 2 home?
For episode 1, I think it was about 6 minutes. And for this
it was only really 4, but okay.
It was around a minute 39.
A minute 39 for the previously on it, but it did have to remind us of a lot of stuff. It did have to remind us of Bran. It had to remind us of the Iron Islands, had to remind us of a lot of things. I want to point out, though, that when it reminded us of Bran, it didn't show the three-eyed raven, the character who's this mystical man in the root of this weirwood trees who's all tangled up in it. And I thought that was pretty funny that they didn't show us him in the previously on because he doesn't look like he did in the previously on. They've recast him with internationally famous actor Max von Sydow.
Yeah, the evil raven come out. You know, again, we're going to get to the Iron Islands,
yeah.
But I wonder again for TV viewers only, when they see the preview and they're like, oh my God, there's this stuff that happened so long ago. Like, does it make them tired or weary? I don't want to have a whole nother storyline brought back in again. Can't we focus on the stuff that we have? I wonder whether that excites them or depresses them.
Well, let's hold off on that because I have some thoughts about how our listeners may feel.
Thank
Once
God.
Again, they can respond on Twitter
okay.
or on Periscope. And so when we go into the cave, it's not only that they've recast the Three-Eyed Raven, but our good friend DJ Tim Hines on Twitter was saying, hey, can you recap, or maybe it was Glenn Ewing, I apologize, one of the two, can say, who is this freaky alien-looking person running around? And sure enough, from the last time we saw Bran and company was in season 4, they had this little character who was a child of the forest. These mystical elves are called the children of the forest. And sure enough, they've redone their look to make them look more alien and almost green lizard-like people.
You know, I'm glad that you said that because I didn't know who the hell she was, but I always get in trouble from you when I don't know things, so I don't say.
That's good.
I don't say to you, like, what the heck was that?
That's because everybody knows that of the over 50 Game of Thrones podcasts you can download, the you want to download with the one by the co-host who always like, what's that again? Remember. So we get into the cave here underneath the weirwood tree, and we see the Three-Eyed Raven, and his eyes have gone white like Bran's used to do when Bran was warging into his direwolf summer. And then sure enough, we see Bran and his...
What? It's a warg party!
Warg... Let me say something.
Please.
I know some readers of the books don't like Bran, but I actually was thrilled to see him. This was fun. And sure enough, we can see his eyes are white, and so he's warging. And then we go back in time, Catfish, to Winterfell, and he's looking at his father as a young boy. His father beat up his...
But not only that, he's looking down on Max von Sydow.
That's right.
I mean...
You mean when they're up in the Winterfell. You mean Bran...
Bran is like 6 foot tall now.
Yeah, well, you know, I don't mind that so much. I don't mind that he's gotten a haircut.
Yeah, of course. You're not the actor who has to pick him up.
Well, I don't even know if I mind that the Three-Eyed Raven looks so different. The last guy was like in a white cloak, I'm pretty sure, and he had, you know, long white hair. So whoever's been given Bran and the Three-Eyed Raven haircuts, you know, they decided to have some fun. But once again, Catfish, let's get to it. We are seeing Winterfell, you know, just ages and ages ago. And so we're going to give it up to my first nominee of Joffrey of the Week. Can you tell in this scene who my nominee for first nominee for Joffrey of the Week is, Catfish?
I think your first nominee for Joffrey of the Week is the guy with the mutton chops.
No.
Oh.
No. My nominee is Benjen Stark. Why? Because just like Joffrey, he's beating up on Ned. He's swinging at Ned. Now, unlike Joffrey, he can't take Ned down, but good work, Uncle Benjen. Yeah, really, really good job. This guy behind them, who do you see? Is this supposed to be the older Stark brother, Brandon, or is it supposed to be Robert Baratheon? Because he's got the mutton chops, and we know Robert had the beard. Who is this character supposed to be, do you think, Catfish? Do they say in
Robert
the scene?
Robert wouldn't be there either, unless he was just visiting.
Well, there's a mention earlier where our girl comes in. What do you think of Lyanna Stark? This is a character who has died 17 years before the TV show even began, because it was her kidnapping by Rhaegar Targaryen. Boy, if TV show watchers don't like backstory of history, this must drive them crazy. But this is Lyanna Stark. Bran says he saw her statue down in the Winterfell crypts, and this is her. This is great. She's riding a horse a bit like Arya. I kind of thought Ned was supposed to be older than her, but in this current look, she looks bigger than Ned, doesn't she?
Well, you know, girls get
girls mature,
faster, but she definitely looks a good 6 years older than him.
Right.
I will say this. Again, this is sort of a book thing. I'm excited to see her because I believe the Lyanna story is important for the rest of the series.
You would believe so. He says, my father never told... Bran, excuse me, tells the Three-Eyed Raven. He's like, my father never talks about her, told me about her. Interesting that here he had this aunt who was, in a lot of ways, the start of Robert's Rebellion, a war that took down the Targaryen dynasty.
Mm-hmm.
But his father never tells him about him. And suddenly Bran is here.
And Bran, you see, this is a good reason for Bran to be immobile, because otherwise he just flits away to wherever he wants. All of a sudden he's down on the floor there.
We suddenly spin around, and Bran thinks they're talking to him, like, because Lyanna tells Ned, she's like, I wanted to spar with somebody bigger like him, and they're looking, sure enough, right at Bran, but sure enough, they were looking past Bran at Willis.
My God, for a second, I thought, Hot Pie was a vampire who hadn't aged.
Hot Pie.
That's freaking Hot Pie, isn't it?
Oh, my goodness gracious. That is Come not on. Hot Pie.
Are you sure it's not Hot Pie?
It's Willis. What you talking about, Willis?
Okay, all right. What you talking about, Hot Pie?
Now, this, let me say, this was shocking. This was thrilling in that Willis, a.k.a. Hodor, is completely normal. He's talking fine. He can speak perfect common tongue.
And yeah. I think the problem with Hodor is not that he can't speak. It's that he can't hear from DJing for too many raves.
But then old Nan, who was in season one, comes out and grabs her son and says he's never going to fight. He's going to be a stable boy. And so this is incredible. This is fun. This is an episode that's going to get a 9 if it continues on this path for me. I'm like, wow, that's exciting.
Wow. Yeah. So I agree. It's a 9.
So then we are pulled back out of this vision into the past. And this is something I find very interesting in that Bran says to the three-eyed raven, he says, you finally, #finally.
Finally.
He says, you finally show me something I'm interested in, something I care about. And then you drag me away. So this tells us a couple things. Number one, that this vision, Bran has been seeing a lot of things, and they are dictated by this guy in these roots, the three-eyed raven. Bran doesn't get to pick what he gets to see. It's being shown to him by the three-eyed raven.
So do you think before that he's just been doing, like, history lessons or butterflies or like the guy's like, why you been wasting my time all this time? What has he been showing him instead of this?
Let me show you the reach when the cherry blossoms are blooming and you'll love this. Yeah, what has he been? Yeah. And this is why in some ways I wish we hadn't skipped a season with him. Even if it had only been like 2 or 3 episodes in season 5, I wish Bran had been around last season.
Okay.
Now, once again, do we want to talk about this creepy lizard creature, a.k.a. this Children of the Forest, because when Bran looks up, they have really made her seem unhuman. You know, like the first one kind of did look like a little girl with maybe some stuff around her, but this thing, this Child of the Forest, whoa, what is going on here?
Yeah, she's more like a sullen teen of the forest.
Right. A sullen teen who has found out about makeup from her mom and gone crazy. It's like a bit too much.
I'm gonna do whatevs with my hair.
Aye.
She's probably got some tats. She's a wild child.
You know, it is. So, sure enough, Bran is like, hey, I wanted to see this, and then you drag me away. And their response is simply, it's beautiful beneath the sea, but if you stay too long, you'll drown.
So you think he would say, if you go in the past too much, you kind of lose your sense of self, you become maybe too untethered?
Well, earlier, Mira Reed, who we're going to see in a second, she and her brother Jojen, back in season 3 or 4, they told Bran, they said, Bran, if you stay in your direwolf too long, you'll get lost in it. And so, yeah, I guess this is because it's a different type of warging. You know, theoretically, he's not seeing through the eyes of an animal. He's just there somehow. And so, yeah, you would get lost in the sea. I want to see more.
Right. This is like one of those guided spiritual warging journeys.
Right.
You know, when someone tells you to close your eyes and they take you on one of those journeys.
Mm. Oh, yeah.
I'm gonna take you. Oh, it's like a warg quest. It's a Warg Vision Quest.
It's a game on the Nintendo 64, the Warg Quest. Now, what does Bran say when the three-eyed raven tells him, you know, you stay beneath the sea too long, you'll drown? What did the
He said, I wasn't in the sea, I was home.
Listen, and blatantly dropping the name of the episode, shame. And, of course, that's a bad shame, so go ahead and ring the shame.
Shame.
The new shame bell.
Shame.
Perfect. Okay, so then Bran tries to talk to Hodor. He's like, hey, Hodor, a.k.a. he suddenly is like, Willis, your name is Willis. I saw you in the past. And Hodor doesn't respond to him. What do you think about that? What do you think's going on there?
Well, I know exactly what Hodor's thinking, though.
Oh, what do you think he's thinking?
Hodor.
Oh, that is definitely what he's thinking. But to me, this is a mystery that has to be solved. The show is now presenting Hodor as what you would say a typical kid back in the past sometime.
Right.
And now something's happened to him. And so this is a mystery that has to be solved.
Wow, that's pretty exciting. You know,
Do you really think it's exciting? And do you think they'll solve it this season?
I think yes. And no, so I would definitely say that it means that this episode deserves a 9.
Okay. All right. And so then Bran's like, where's Meera? And Hodor's like, she's outside the cave. And the cave, this is, I hope, maybe just they've redone everything. Suddenly the cave has a door on it. The cave in the previous season.
It gets drafty in there.
Yeah, but in the previous season, theoretically, they entered a different way. There was certainly no wooden door on the cave.
Well, if you're going to be like that.
It just gets a bit confusing. And so, sure enough, Mira's out here. And Meera just looks.
They drag Bran out. And then he's like casually lying on the ground like, yo, what up, girl?
Well, do you think you don't think Bran's going to Hodor? Why did you get me closer to her?
Yeah, right.
You have to be like 7 feet behind her, buddy.
Can you fashion some kind of snow chair or something, bro? You just kind of toss me onto my side.
And so Bran, he's trying to share, you know, the three-eyed raven and the child of the forest. They probably aren't great conversationalists. Neither is Willis/Hodor. So he's like, I got to talk to somebody about this. And he goes out to Meera. He's like, hey, I saw in the past. I saw Hodor. He could talk. He could speak. And she's like, whatevs.
Well, I will say this.
Say it.
Even though I've already said I think it's going to be Jon Snow and Daenerys together.
Yeah.
I really think it should be Meera and Jon Snow. They can just mope around to each other. How was your day? Oh, it sucked. How about yours? Yeah, it sucked too.
Well, Bran is right. It is not safe outside of the cave. And Meera says real ominous words. She says it's not safe anywhere. Uh-oh.
True story.
Uh-oh.
You know why she knows that?
Right.
She's been watching the rest of the show.
That's a good point. And Bran tells her, hey, you know, he doesn't say this. He's like, it's not safe outside the cave because last time these skeletons, these whites controlled by the White Walkers attacked us. Mm-hmm. And he's like, listen to me. You've got to be inside. The Three-Eyed Raven says a war is coming. And that is one thing we believe. There is a war coming,
right.
Don't you think?
She says you're going to fight it in there. I mean, she seems to be really anti-knowledge. I mean, let's face it. Bran's not going to fight this war physically.
Right.
He's going to have to do it with knowledge. And so this is where it is. He's getting the knowledge.
Well, Meera, because her brother died in the 10th episode of season 4, we never really got to see her mourn her brother.
R.I.P. Dojin.
Maybe she's just, you know, down, and I don't blame her for that. She turns to the child of the forest, and she's like, I'm just miserable. The child of the forest is saying, listen, Brandon Stark is going to need you.
Right.
And then there's some cryptic words, once again, words that you would assume are foreshadowing, drink. Mm. She says, hey, you know, Bran's fine. He's back in the cave. And then is it the three-eyed raven who said he's not always going to be in the caves? Ooh. He isn't going to stay here forever were her exact words. He need out here, out there, a.k.a. he needs you. So is this implying that Bran, this is a temporary layover in the cave and that he's going to move again?
Well, absolutely. He's getting the knowledge he needs to fight this war. Okay? So he can do his part in the war. And then you forget the part where, oh, I don't know why I'm not seeing it here. I guess one of the first time I saw it, the sullen teen of the forest asked Meera if she wanted to do a doob. Let's go smoke a J.
Hey, now, this is, you know, we don't talk about enough about just the effects on the show. I personally find this effect
shot. You're talking about it all the time.
This effect shot of Meera looking out on the frozen wasteland. Yeah, there isn't a single tree anywhere else out there. That is a beautiful shot. But that's it for Bran, Meera, Willis/Hodor, the Three-Eyed Raven this week. I thought it was a great tease, a great taste of something. But
so
I want to see more.
Nine.
If everything had been this enjoyable to me, I would give it more than a 7. But we're about to see some stuff that isn't so great. Now, Catfish, everybody knows I used to do improv comedy. And down in King's Landing, we've got Jerry Seinfeld here, really doing a great act.
There's no way that's not what he is doing.
Boom, boom,
he's doing
boom,
again,
boom, ba-doom,
calling
boom,
back
boom,
to last
boom,
week
boom,
with
boom,
Monty ba-doom. Python. He is literally doing the same voice from the wink, wink, nudge, nudge, say no more sketch.
She never seen anything like it.
Does she go? He's saying, Cersei goes. Does she go? Cersei goes.
Okay. Oh, my goodness gracious. But this routine, you know, this is a hilarious routine. It's getting some eye rolls from Elaine. And so
you're so wrong.
She looks like Elaine. Okay. Listen, he wouldn't lie about this. So everybody loves a boaster except one person. Everybody loves boasters except, did you see this coming? This guy steps outside to relieve himself, and he's about to be relayed.
By the way, this is the funniest scene in this episode.
This is
good. The last episode was the Dothraki top five. Mm-hmm. This one here, he turns around. We hear this beautiful, some beautiful sound effects work, the tinkling on the guy's armor.
Let me say.
And then he says to him, hey, you got something on the back of your head.
Oh, no. Oh, no. Let me just say, when you're...
It's the wall.
When you're in line at a urinal, it's tough. And this was just stone cold brutal. The mountain that rose from the dead.
Wink, wink, nudge, nudge, he says no more.
The nudge, nudge was a bit nudging into the face, into the wall. Ouch. So that was fun. Boy, here are two things I love so far. I love the mountain kicking butt.
Yeah, this episode was full of fun.
Okay.
The dog, so much fun.
All right, yeah. Edit. All right, so Cersei wants to go to her daughter's funeral. Mm-hmm. This, to me, I understand it, but boy, after what they did to me, I'm not sure I would want to go near this Sept of Baelor ever again. And
well,
her
why
son.
Not? Because it seems to have quite an effect on Jaime.
Right. So she steps outside, and her son has set a plethora of Lannister guards to keep her from leaving.
Who are. I couldn't say they could not be any more relieved when she stands down.
At this point, she has not yet chosen violence. You know what I mean?
By the way, I would think this be your favorite scene because you know what? There's a lot of here.
What?
A lot of great eye work.
You mean the guy's looking at this?
The guy keeps looking over
at
the Franken Mountain. And
yeah, the lead guy. But look at the guy. I want to show our Periscope watchers. There's a guy on the far left of the screen. Do you see this guy? You would be blown away. So sure enough, they are very relieved that
already.
They are very relieved that Cersei turns around. I do not blame them at all. Oh, wait a minute. Hey, somebody on the chat room said maybe that person with mutton chops before wasn't older brother Brandon Stark and wasn't Robert Baratheon, but was Sir Roderick Cassel, the guy who Theon chopped off his head. And remember his crazy burns?
Chop. Yeah. But he was so much older.
Yeah.
Good Lord. Maybe he wasn't getting the good meat. They weren't feeding him the good meat.
Okay. So after the mountain kills Jerry.
Because he literally looks like 6 years older than the boys.
Okay, so we go into the Sept of Baelor, and Jaime...
Or as I like to call it, Jaime's hot spot.
Jaime's hot spot. And so Tommen, if I was Tommen, remember Tommen last season, in season five, he went to get Margaery out of prison, and the people outside the Sept of Baelor were screaming abomination at him because of all these rumors about his birth.
Yeah.
And so I'm surprised he isn't afraid. And so Jaime is like, listen, Tommen, it's fine. She, you know, this is okay. You got to visit your mother, and your mother misses you. And that's a good message.
Right. And he mentioned something else too.
Yeah. What's up?
He says that your mother is forgiving. She'll forgive you. That's, you know, whenever I think of Cersei, that's the first word that comes to my head.
Are you saying that?
Forgiving.
Yeah.
She's a forgiving person. No.
Are you saying that Jaime is lying to his son here, Kevin?
Well, no, I think he's hopeful. Also, I mean, what choice does she have? She's down to one.
Oh, right. She'll forgive this one. Right.
I mean, what else has she got?
I want to say there's a shot where it looks like there's some jars placed around Myrcella's kind of tomb there. And, and I wonder if that was, remember, in real life, the common practice is that they would take out your organs. The pharaohs, they'd take out their organs. And so I wondered if that was kind of about that. And have they removed Myrcella's organs? Yuck. Ugh. Let's not think about that too much. And so, sure enough, the sparrows and the high sparrow, comes in to this private moment.
I just a quick question about the sparrow here.
Yeah.
Has he never heard the term cleanliness is next to godliness? I mean, he seems to make a fetish of being dirty. He looks like
it's wasteful. It's wasteful.
Bad.
Wasting water.
Everybody else is clean and well-shaven.
No. No, come on. Why waste water?
Not him. He's like, the dirtier the better.
Well, this scene I thought was an okay scene. I think it was a level 7 scene, if you will, because it brought up a couple of questions to me, like actually a lot of questions, in that Jamie, who lists a bunch of sins, admittedly, Jamie had an omission. He doesn't mention, I pushed this kid out a window to kill him, and it crippled the poor kid. Jamie doesn't mention
that. There's another omission there.
Which one? There are a bunch. What other ones?
Well, the fact that he sired 4 children with his sister, that's also an omission.
4 children.
We got
edit. Okay, there's our real edit, Periscope listeners. He does... Okay, somebody in Periscope tweets or responds. Three.
Thank you, Holly.
This is another Monty Python moment we're having. Jamie and Susie had 5 children. 3, sir. 3 children. All right, so.
I keep thinking about Rickon. He's gone. I can't remember who he belongs to. Rickon's gone. Now listen, here's an important thing
let's hear it.
He says
he lists his sins though, and this the High Sparrow has arrested people for doing much milder things. Like remember Marjorie, who Tommen can't get out right now. This still seems crazy that the king isn't you know, when the High Sparrow's like, I can't release your wife till she confesses. Tommen should just be like, F it. Just you're the king for God's sake.
How about all those guys who are gonna stop the mountain and Cersei from going anywhere?
Right.
How about they go and take care of this guy?
Exactly, but, right.
And the reason why is
what?
It's very important. The High Sparrow says we live by mother's mercy, and what he forgets to mention is and a shitload of friends.
Right.
Because as soon as he says that, they all show up.
But why, if you're keeping Marjorie for, once again, the equivalent of perjury, that is her crime. Perjury too, admittedly, to the faith, that is pretty terrible. But when Jamie lists these things he's done, hello, why don't the Sparrows arrest him? Why don't these faith militant knuckleheads grab him?
Well, that's a great question. All I can say is I still don't know what the High Sparrow's game is, but he certainly has a long game here. Mm-hmm. So I don't fault him for not making a move, because so far every move he's made has been a right move.
All right.
So maybe he's waiting
later
for Jamie.
Fair enough. But how about this? Mm-hmm. One thing that the show hasn't explained yet is, does Jamie know which sins Cersei has confessed to? Because, correct me if I'm wrong, did she confess to fooling around with her cousin Lancel? Jamie would not like that. Does Jamie know she knows that? Because that would be oh snap, a lot of trouble, don't you think?
I think it could be some trouble. So you think that Jamie thinks that she has been completely faithful to him?
I would think that's what he believed. He finds out about this, but we don't know yet what he knows about Cersei's predicament.
Do you believe that Jaime has been completely faithful to her?
Oh, yeah. Who? I think so. He's acted that way. He said that repeatedly to Catelyn Stark when he didn't have to tell Catelyn Stark anything. He was using his faithfulness to Cersei, remember, back in season 2. He's like, Ned Stark, father to bastard. You know, he fooled around. But while I've been faithful to one woman only. Yes, she's my sister, but I was faithful.
Yeah, well,
focus on the faithfulness.
Listen, everyone's got to have a code.
Right. So then we have a effect shot which works not quite as well, but Cersei in the Red Keep looking down on the city. And then we have this scene with Tommen. And Tommen in this scene, he's trying to be a little Joffrey-esque. And
He's no Joffrey.
Oh, dear Lord, no.
He is no Joffrey. Even at the end...
Is he going to become Joffrey because he's like, I could have torn down these towers. I could have done this. I could have done that. What do you think?
Well, I'll say this. He says, I'm going to need your help. And I will say that any counsel that Cersei will give will be Joffrey-like.
That is very, very, very true. But the scene to me, once again, it felt like a lot of the scenes last week. Okay, it's reestablishing for quote-unquote new viewers who these two are and their relationship.
Okay.
And maybe inching Tommen to kind of be more aggressive, for lack of a better word. But it really...
Right, but I think that you're giving it a hard time.
I am.
Because you think that it's going, that it's, this is part of a slow buildup. What if we just have this scene, and then the next time we see Tommen, he's kicking ass as a result of this scene? I think you might be you might be knocking it because you're projecting.
Maybe, but I don't mind slow buildups if they lead to a great payoff. This to me, maybe it will.
This could be all we need to set Tommen on the path to Joffreyhood before he loses it, because no one could keep it together the way King Jay did.
Amen. All right, so let's leave King's Landing and let's go across the Narrow Sea and way beyond the city of Atlantis and past the ruins of Valeria and to, sure enough, a city that kind of looks like ruins because the harpy statue still just laid out on the ground, to the pyramids of Meereen. And what did you think about Meereen?
Yeah. Well, quick question for you.
Sure.
When was the last time that Tyrion was in a room with two other dudes where he had the biggest penis?
I can promise you it has never happened before. I don't know. Edit. Sorry. You know what,
it's
Catfish?
A valid point.
Evil Uncle Tyrion.
He makes a point, and this is a little bit of a funny thing, too, where he's like, whoops, and whoops. I mean, he's used to, you know, with Varys.
Yeah.
He knows Varys is going to give it a hard time, but he doesn't really know the worm, so he might be a little like, I'm sorry about that.
Well, some people, some listeners and some people online, I know were kind of like, well, gee, the quote-unquote, you don't have any man junk, the jokes that they had last episode were kind of lame. And so in this scene, the man junk jokes came up again. But the fact that they pulled Grey Worm into it, I did find that a bit better humor.
I liked it. Funny. Whoops. Sorry about that.
And then...
Also, Varys always trying to harsh Tyrion's buzz. No drinky to wine.
Right. And so, you know, I think that's better. You know, a drunk Tyrion, yeah, or a sober Tyrion. What do you want, the sober Tyrion?
No, hell no. A drunk Tyrion's way more fun.
Okay, so this is important news, and I'm going to make what I like to call a call.
A call?
That's where I call something, predict something that's going to happen.
With a call?
Not in this case, no, but because you got a better call, I'm going to just say it. So... In last week's episode, Varys said, he goes, you know, I've sent my little birds out and soon they'll tell me who leads the
Sons of the
Harpy.
Right, and I thought those birds were going through the city, but apparently they're going throughout the world.
Apparently. But we...
Now, just a quick question. So yes. Now is he talking about actual birds? I always thought he meant the birds were like people who were spies.
Yeah, little children, right.
Okay. But now, since he's getting word from all around the world, people just must be sending him birds. Even if they're really people,
that's true.
Birds.
That's a good point. That's
so
good
it's
point.
Either he just has birds or he has quote-unquote birds sending him birds.
All right. So, but can I do my call
it's
now that
complex.
You interrupted?
Yes.
It's about the birds.
Listen, call.
All right. So, he said last week he's going to find out. He said the attack in the fighting pits prove that they take orders from somebody, the Sons of the Harpy. In this, it's a minor little note buried in all the talking, but they say the two other slave cities there at Slaver's Bay, he says, Astapor and Young Kai are pretty much have been taken back over by the slavers.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was thinking out there, well, what is a plot hole? What is still out there? What is possibly... something, a dangling loose thread from previous seasons. And so you know what? This is
fill me in. Give me the call.
This is a half-court shot. So I'm going to do a call.
Boom. Curry it up.
So back in season two, Daenerys went and she had that vision and she burned the warlocks. But then in the first episode of season three, there was that little girl who rolled a ball to her.
Right.
She went to the ball. A evil beetle came out and was going to sting Daenerys. Yada, yada, yada. And... Jorah, and at the time, sure enough, Ser Barristan, they're like, it proves that the warlocks of Qarth are still angry and upset and ready to get you. And so what if, call me crazy, what if the people running the Sons of the Harpy are the warlocks from Qarth who are still trying to get their revenge? Season one of season three, episode one, they showed that the warlocks were out there trying to kill Daenerys. Why did they stop? I can't think of anybody better who would be running the Sons of the Harpy. But this is a crazy, like I said, half court, better call shot. I'm calling my shot.
Okay.
What do you think? Is that too crazy? Is that too far back? There's no way TV viewers would remember that, or what do you think?
I mean, they seem to feel all they need to do is drop a little information
in the previously on,
and we'll just roll with it.
Yeah, no, I think that is a great point. So anyway,
Holly Humpen says that's past foreshadowing. Drink.
I feel bad. Okay, I'm bad. But if in next week's episode, previously on, you suddenly see the House of the Undying, I'm calling my call. I got my call. I got call. Ooh, I got my call.
Well, all right. So let's. Now I have to get you back on track.
Okay.
The important, amazing thing that happens here is.
Tyrion says,
hey. Tyrion's got a little story about dragons.
Right.
And he says there's two things he's good for.
Yeah.
One of them is drinking, and the other one is knowing stuff. That's pretty much what he says. No, he doesn't say it exactly, but pretty much, I know stuff.
And isn't it interesting that the dragons theoretically aren't eating since Daenerys left? Tyrion says, you know, the last dragons in Westeros and King's Landing were the size of cats. They were tiny. And so he's like, we get the dragon in captivity is bad. I'm going to go down there and take the chain off. And this is flat out nuts. Woohoo!
What I love about it is,
yeah.
And this is, you know, when I said last week, I was upset because Tyrion doesn't get to tangle with people.
Right.
But again, this is Tyrion showing, like, sometimes you have to take chances. And because of the way he's been brought up, he'll take those crazy chances because somebody has to. He knows when he's stuck in a tough situation, you got to do crazy things. Like the wildfire.
Yeah, he says these dragons are smart creatures. And so let me tell you, I would not do that. I would not get close to the dragons. We got a lot of tweets of people who said Missandei's dress they love and they want to get close to her. They want to get close to the dragons.
This is really curious because the one thing I kind of have been unsatisfied on this show is knowing what her relationship with her dragons are.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they sort of set it up like they kind of don't trust her or maybe even like her.
Right.
So the fact that Tyrion's able to go in and just like, okay, they're smart, so they'll know I'm their friend.
Whoa.
Seems a little risky.
Right. But
by the way, I just want to say a good point by one of our fans. He said, Varys didn't go for the dragons, no balls.
Hey,
Thank you, Matt Papa.
Hey, Matt Papa, how could you?
You know what? That is value added. Sometimes we can't bring all the jokes. So
right.
Thank God our listeners on Periscope.
Is this a bit of a shot or a callback to Raiders of the Lost Ark? Remember when Indy throws the fire down to the chamber and he's like, oh, snakes are down there. And his buddy Sala goes, yeah, Viper, it's very dangerous. You go first. Varys is pulling that.
Well,
Tyrion.
There's no you going first. It's you're the only one who's going.
Right.
And then Tyrion tells also, you know, it's been a long time since we heard any stories from his past. Again, as a book reader, after a while, Tyrion became my favorite character.
What?
That was before I discovered the Joffrey chapters and saw and heard things from Joffrey's point of view.
Sure.
And so, even though kind of by default he's become one of those characters,
right.
I wasn't a super fan of his journey last year.
Okay. All right. And so, Tyrion, he's sneaking up, and these dragons, they don't kill him.
They don't because—
Why they, not?
Because they want something more than just a snack.
Yeah, right. They're like, that won't fill me.
No.
You know, once we cook this one to a crisp— It'd be like, there'd be no meat on the bones.
There'd be nothing left.
He just, you know what, these dragons are thinking that evil Uncle Tyrion, he just doesn't.
Measure up.
No, I was thinking doesn't count for a full meal, but okay.
Oh, good. So he tells a story about finding out how the dragons were gone and they were sad. And then he does this super ballsy thing that Varys could not do.
Hey, now.
No balls.
Ouch.
And that is, he lets the dragons go. Now, I'm a little confused about what happens at the end of this. So yeah. You're going to have to fill me in.
Yeah, no. Well, let me say, number one, I talk about the great effects and this and that. But one thing, somehow these chains have seemingly gotten bigger. Have you noticed that? Those chains that Daenerys put around their necks.
Who is the guy who has to go in and change the chains?
Right. It's like, that bigger. Chain's getting a little tight. Let's put a new one on and take the old one off.
Well, the curious thing is you need to know about the lore of dragons. If they don't eat, how long can they kind of lay dormant? Not grow, but also not die, and just kind of conserve their energy.
Right. How smart are dragons? I don't know. Well, you know, if they won't eat, and the one dragon sees Tyrion take the chain off the one, and so he presents his neck and say, hey, do me too, buddy. And then these dragons, they don't fly out the open door. Maybe the door's too small. They've grown so big.
It does look too small. So my question to you is there an entrance out the back we haven't seen?
Oh, you would not assume so, dear God. You would not assume so. You'd be like, let's not do that. Let's not. And so that's it in Meereen. Is this setting up?
No, you forget the last joke where Tyrion's like, hey, don't let me do something stupid like that again.
Yeah, I know. Tyrion does a lot of dumb things, so we'll have to see.
But again,
Black-Eyed Lily, she says she loved Tyrion and the dragons. She said it was corny, yes, but she really liked him.
No, it was cool. He tells a little story about, I would like to have him tell longer stories. Like, Tyrion is one of the cool people in this world that has tried to adjust.
Punch me, baby.
He's tried to adjust to being dealt a crappy hand, and he's a survivor.
Okay.
You know who else has been dealt a crappy hand?
One of the worst hands in quite a while. It's in the Bravos. It's Arya Stark.
It's Arya, who once again...
Or is it no one? Because she has many chances to say a name, and she keeps saying no one. She could get food. She could get under shelter. She could get her eyes back, and she keeps saying it's no one. So.
Well, I have got to think that this is one of the things that upsets you, because all she has to do is say it three times... I'm no one, and all of a sudden she's back in the good graces of Jaqen.
No, it didn't upset me, but it felt like just as Tyrion would be kind of like a, not really a meal, a snack for the...
As one of our listeners would say, one piece of popcorn chicken.
Right. He'd be a McNugget for the dragons. And so the fact that we get these little nuggets of Arya, I think if this had been in one episode where at the beginning of the episode you saw the scene from last week, and then at the end of the episode, you saw the scene of Jaqen saying, okay, and I shouldn't call him Jaqen because he's no one too. And he's like, okay,
Jaqen because it's going to be confusing if we say, well, then no one said to no one.
No one said to no one. Well, the girl is no one. And she says to the guy, no one, hey, I'm no one.
I sense another Abbott Costello routine.
Okay, all right. And so he says, come. And so theoretically, she's back in the good graces. But this story is just taking such small kind of mini steps. What's interesting is
speaking of taking mini steps, I would have loved it if Arya had missed a step and taken a tumble. I mean, come on. Give me some jokes. Give me one joke.
Right. As opposed to her getting beaten. All right. So then we're going to go to a scene that in some ways I loved and in some ways I didn't love. And that's this.
So it's like my ratings for this episode. You gave the scene a 9 and a 0.
All right. So the first, I'm going to give the beginning part of the scene a 9, where we're with Roos Bolton, we're with Ramsay Bolton, and we're with a new character. He's only called Lord Card Stark here in the scene, but the credits say his name is Harold Karstark. And Harold Karstark is sure enough a Bolton supporter. How do the Bolton supports have any support in the North? Well, sure enough, he says, the Starks, when Robb Stark cut off my father's head, screw it. We need some new leadership. He's for change.
Somehow and it turns out he's up for far more change than we even originally assumed.
Right.
But in the previously on, we got a little snippet of that. So I have to say, for those people who are only show watchers, and again, I read the first four books.
Right.
I wouldn't know how you'd keep up with everything. So God bless you for sticking with it.
Right. Yeah, it does. There are a million characters.
So now there's a very important thing that's said here.
Yes, I want you to get to it. So get to it, Catfish.
Well, the wall, which for thousands of years, the Night's Watch has been completely impartial.
Right.
Even in the middle of the war, yes. They've sent their thieves, murderers, and brigands,
and farmhands,
all their best people,
all the best,
to the wall,
sure,
to protect us from what's north of the wall, which some people don't even believe in. But still, they sent them up to the wall to protect the northern border.
Mm-hmm.
So now,
well, Ramsay is like, I know where Sansa and Theon are going. They're going to Castle Black because that's where, right, Jon Snow is. Right. Why don't we go up there? It's not protected from the south. I'll just go up there and I'll, you know, take over and kill him. And what's hilarious is, despite the fact that Alistair Thorne just did it a couple of episodes ago, Roose Bolton, who has no morals whatsoever, he's like, you'd kill the commander of the Night's Watch?
Right. And then he says something very interesting.
He says,
which I'd like you to play, that if you, basically, if you act like a dog, you get put down by a dog.
Yeah, but he says, like, if you kill the Lord Commander of the Night's Watch, every house in the North would turn against us. And
right. And so then he says, no, we've got all the strong people in the North.
Right. And he lists the families that Ramsay lists the families who are claiming, who are theoretically on the Bolton side, which in some of this doesn't make too much sense. Admittedly, he says the Karstarks, they make sense, but he also says the Umbers and Manderlys. The Umbers, we did see an Umber back in season one. And so he was on their side. And the Manderlys, we technically, this is, you would only know this for the book, we saw one person at the Red Wedding wearing a Manderly kind of pin, and he got killed at the Red Wedding. But otherwise, we haven't seen any Manderlys on the show, but he's saying these three families are supporting them. And what gets even crazier, though, Catfish.
Tell me how crazy it is.
Is he saying...
Episodes of Nine.
He's saying the Boltons, Manderlys, and Karstark support us. But where did we last see your favorite character, Rickon? Where was he headed? He was headed to the Umbers. That's where Bran told him to go, is to the Umbers.
So what is your supposition that
why would
playing a little hard and fast with the facts? Hmm. Or do you think those people are really with him?
I don't want to guess.
Okay.
But I would say if you look in the previously on, there could be a really harrowing sign. Ramsay, you're right. He says, we got these three families. What does it matter?
Right. We got all the strong ones.
And we're the Boltons. That's four. Yeah.
You know, by the way, he's already like, it was the most important thing was to have Sansa. And now they're like, well, I guess she's lost. We sent our best guys. They're not coming back. So,
right.
You know, basically, instead of ruling using her, he's got a new plan.
Right.
Boom.
And so the...
And this is what I like. The thing that he says is, again... As bad
who's
as
he
is,
in this case?
The father.
Roose.
Yeah. He says, if you require reputation as a mad dog, you'll be treated as a mad dog. So
you'll be taken out back and slaughtered to said feed to the pigs.
And so the important thing here to remember is that this, the kind of world we're in, is that even people who have a flayed man on their flag, they still have some sort of morals.
And let's talk about the worst ill-timed baby announcement ever.
You mean the Triple B?
Triple B.
The bouncing Bolton boy?
He bounced on the kennel floor.
Oh,
my God. So let's get to it. I saw some people tweeting out already that they didn't need a scene of Ramsay being terrible. But this scene, I predicted it last week. It was my Better Call call.
Did you?
Well, I said Ramsay would kill Roose. But who thought it would be this quick?
Exactly.
Especially when Roose says, you'll always be my firstborn. And so, yeah, because I'll always be your firstborn. Yes, Ed,
you know,
you're not going to have any morning board.
There's a parallel here to a scene we saw last week. Can you tell me what it is?
Oh, what do you mean by that?
Well,
you're talking about Dorne.
Exactly. I'm talking about Dorne, where we see somebody get killed in front of somebody else, and it turns out they're in on it. So it's sort of shocking that it would happen in public. But basically, the other person's just like, yep, that's exactly the way I thought that was going to go. Now, remember...
Well, I thought the better callback was that, you know, you saw Ramsay hug his father, Roose, and they're kind of having, quote-unquote, a close moment. And then Ramsay pulls a stab right to the heart to his father. And that's what his father did to Robb Stark at the Red Wedding.
You know, the
father's going out the way he killed people.
You know,
maybe he should respect that. He's like, son, you killed me, but I respect that.
You know what Roose forgot to say to Ramsay?
What?
Don't kill me.
He didn't give an order. I didn't break an order.
To give an order. I think we've made that. If this season of Game of Thrones tells you nothing else, please remind people in your life not to kill you.
And if you remember back to the Red Wedding, Catelyn Stark found out about that bad stuff was going to go down because she saw Roos had some chainmail underneath his cloak. Why didn't you always just wear that, Roos? Never take it off.
Yeah, it's heavy, although not as heavy as the necklace that the maester comes in with.
Somebody on Periscope just said he got boltoned by a bolton.
Oh, ouch.
Ouch. And then this maester, Ramsay's like, bring my stepmom and the kid here. And the maester's like, she's resting. And he's like, I'll get her. And so some people did not like this.
Oh, really? What a shock.
Gratuitous violence. But I liked it because it was menacing. I thought Roose's death didn't have a great build-up. It was kind of one of these like door, a shock for shock's sake. While on the other side,
someone on Periscope said, Lady Walder is, the dogs are still eating. It's like having a supersized meal with fries. Oh, man. You see, that's the kind of jokes I could never get away with.
As a Periscope person said this. Let me say, these dogs, after Miranda and now Walda and the baby, they're like, winter's coming, we're full.
Well, remember, Miranda, she was skin and bone. She's nothing, but they're gonna have a nice sleep tonight after that full meal.
Oh, okay. Well, I thought it was an effective scene. What I'm going to say about it.
You think if you were to...
Yeah, effective, ask, horrible scene, but effective scene.
Ramsay, what do you think his favorite side is? Is it patricide or fratricide?
It's a tough call. Tough call.
This is my good side, patricide.
And when he led her, because we saw those kennels so well in last season, when Sansa Stark was led into the kennels, when she saw Reek, a.k.a. Theon... I knew where they were going, and so I found it an effective scene. I know some people.
Do you think it went on too long?
No, I didn't. I thought, you know, this is a. I mean, they cut away, so we're not seeing.
Yeah, we didn't see it. We didn't hear noises of it. It wasn't like, you know, with the rape of Sansa, where we went and saw Reeks. We saw no one's reaction to it. We just know that it's still going on, and obviously, we have some very sensitive listeners. Yeah. On Periscope, who have made really, really horrible jokes, and I want to thank them for every single one of them.
And so people say, we know Ramsay's evil. Why do you have to keep showing him being evil? And what I would say about that, Catfish, is I would say that Ramsay, yes, we've got the double W's out there, the White Walkers, but if he wasn't our quote-unquote big bad before, he really is now. And, and if Roos is out of the way, you know— Roos, you know, kind of kept kept Ramsay as close to in check as anybody could. So what this signals is Ramsay's not in check. And so I'll do a better call. Ramsay can't survive this season. But you've got to make him as crazy and as insane as possible if you're going
to
kill him.
Quick question to
you. Sure.
Ramsay brings up the idea to Roos about let's I've got this planned, it's great.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so if Roos says yes to the plan, does he still live?
That's a great call.
There's two things that happen.
Yeah.
One, he says no to the plan. Two, his wife has a boy. So if either one of those things happened, does Ramsay die? Does he have to say yes and have a girl?
Well, the timing, I think, was just too crazy. If somehow he had said, okay, Ramsay, go to Castle Black, do what you're going to do, and Ramsay had been away while when the announcement of the birth came.
Right.
But they were too close. I think it was the birth that caused the deaths in Ramsay's eyes. And so
it wasn't him saying no.
I don't think so.
Either one of those things would have – he only needs one reason, and you just gave him two.
And so let's continue.
Of course, he had to prep the way with the Karstark.
Yeah.
Because he was not surprised.
No, he – right. In fact, the Karstark is correcting the maester's grammar. You know, like, hey, Ramsay's the Lord here. Why don't you be good there, buddy?
Yeah.
I would say that the one thing that if you really watch it kind of from a logistical standpoint, which is what the books are great for, the show isn't so great for sometimes, in my opinion – the phrase married with the Boltons, creating a powerful alliance, when you kill the Walder Frey's daughter, that alliance is it's wind. There's no alliance there anymore. Obviously, when he married Sansa, the Bolton alliance with the Lannisters disappeared. Now he's killed the Frey. The alliance and the help that the Freys could have given, that's gone.
He didn't need to do that because Roose had already accepted him as his natural born son, so he was the first son. If Roose dies and Ramsay is still alive, he's still in charge.
Yeah, but I think Ramsay wisely saw that, just one wrong move and his dad would kick him the heck out. You know, like your dad did.
What I'm saying is after he gets rid of Roose,
right,
he doesn't also need to kill the brother.
Right. No, good point. Good point. Yeah, of course.
But you know what? Sometimes he just gets a wild hair and he just does stuff.
Right.
He went on a little bit of a spree.
It's a dark line, but I did love the line. I prefer being an only child. You know how there are a bunch of things you can't say to your siblings anymore? That's one you can't say anymore to your siblings.
Good point.
All right, so let's get out. This episode jumped around a lot. And so I guess the Bolton stuff, as dark and as horrific as it was. And now we're back outside with Brienne and Sansa. And I love that suddenly, I don't think Sansa has mentioned her sister Arya since season one of the show. She's never out loud, the character, in any scene we've seen, see her talk about Arya. Well, she kind of mentioned her, let me correct that, she kind of mentioned her in season five when they were at Moat Cailin, but otherwise, this is it. And so the fact that she's finding out Arya's alive and Arya's not dressed like a princess, she giggles and laughs at that, not dressed like a lady. One thing that doesn't make too much sense is Brienne, when she's telling the story about, hey, I ran into your sister, she doesn't mention that your sister was with the Hound. What's going on here?
Well, I don't know. What is going on?
Does she assume Sansa doesn't know who the Hound is? The Hound is a, quote-unquote, pretty well-known figure in Westeros. Yes, he was dead. You know, she just says, I saw her with a man. But I don't think he heard her.
Well, maybe she doesn't know the Hound. Why would she know the Hound?
What do you mean?
By face.
Well, obviously Podrick does. Podrick's seen him.
Oh, right. Okay, that's true.
In the Hound with the scarred face, you would assume, I don't know. She just said a man, so maybe she didn't say anything about it. But this scene really is to set up that Podrick, you would assume Podrick, Brienne, and Sansa are headed to Castle Black, where her brother John is.
Mm-hmm.
Nice call.
Rest
there.
Rest in peace.
And that Theon is like, I can't go to Castle Black. And she's like, yeah, but your sins will be forgotten. Why does Theon want to go home? He gets a horse even. You know, I'd be like, Theon, you did kill those two innocent kids. Yeah, they weren't my brother. Yeah, you did behead Sir Roderick. Why?
I mean,
what's going on?
Didn't you see the Iron Islands? Who wouldn't want to go there? I mean, what a vacation spot.
Oh, a five-night stay on Pike.
Oh, my God.
You and a friend will spend five nights enjoying miserable.
You know what reminds me of when I was in Minnesota one time?
Yeah?
Is that a lot of the office buildings have hallways between the office buildings up in the air.
Yeah, Skyway.
So people don't have to walk.
That great replacement song, Skyway.
They don't have to walk in the horrible weather.
Yeah.
They haven't realized that in the Iron Islands. It's windy and rainy. Let me cross this rickety bridge.
Well, they're boat people. They walk on ships all the time. It's got to be no different from walking on a ship crashing in the waves.
I'm just saying, Theon.
Yeah.
Theon got to be Theon, and so he's going to go home. Home is where the hearth is.
I say shame. It doesn't make too much sense. But she's like, okay, you were a jerk, but you kind of, but finally you helped me escape. So therefore.
I have to say, I'm completely unthrilled with any of the Iron Island stuff.
Ooh.
I brought that up earlier
as far
as I didn't know whether that would frustrate people. I don't care. I don't, there's enough people involved here. I don't need to get those guys involved.
Right. Well, they do set it up. You were asking what people who had forgotten about this plot line, what they would think. And so they do at least set up. Theon's like, you know, forget this. I'm going home. And then we smash cut to Pike. And sure enough, there's Papa Greyjoy. We haven't seen him, Balon Greyjoy. We haven't seen him since season three, believe it or not. The end of season three. And he's just miserable. He's saying what is dead may never die because he's finding out, you know, we had this one final castle that we had held on to. And they're all dead, but all your men are dead. But what is dead may never die.
Right. And she repeats it just because she has to. And then she goes, yeah, what is dead may never die. But let me remind you, they are dead.
Right. Right. They did what is dead is dead.
Yeah.
And she, they kind of get,
what is dead is cold and stiff and cannot fight any longer.
And she makes a real kind of, we're not strong. She says, hey, we can attack people on the sea, but we'll never hold a castle against landed armies. And he's like, well, you won't hold them if you take good fighters and try to rescue a brother and then fail at it. And he like, oh, snap, you sucked.
This just goes to show you how everyone,
yeah,
you know, when you have a certain amount of power, how much ego goes with it. Because he reminds her, hey, you know what? There used to be five kings. Guess what? There's only one now. Like, that means anything. And, I mean, he is the king of, I don't know where this comes from, but he is the king of jack and squat.
He says, and he says to her, he goes, shut your mouth and obey. Ooh, women love hearing that. Son, this is a dad telling his daughter, shut your mouth and obey, or I'll make another heir. Ooh.
Well, I will say this, though. I mean, even though she does not get treated well,
yeah,
I mean, what other place in the five kingdoms, where would they even consider?
In the five kingdoms, will you ring the shame bell, Catfish? That is
the seven kingdoms.
Oh, my God. Yes. Please download a podcast where one of the basic facts of how many kingdoms there are is in question.
I was thinking of the five kings.
Okay.
All right. So listen.
Yeah.
Even though she gets treated, they're a little roughshod with her.
Right.
This would be the only place where she would even be considered to be the leader.
Well, Dorne, maybe. You know, if they'll take the bastard mistress of the prince's brother Oberyn, you know, huh?
Well, I mean, basically, maybe.
All right, so Catfish, let's get to it. This character we haven't seen in season three. We never liked Balin Greyjoy when he was on the show a lot in season two, and
he's
a lot
back. Here we go.
And so he's having this fight with a character we've never met before, who turns out to be one of his brothers.
And it's not confusing at all that it's totally dark and the guy looks like Theon.
Oh, you think he looks like Theon? He's certainly more well-fed than Theon.
He is, but if you didn't, I mean, we had a smash cut, but sometimes you don't know whether time has passed.
Sure.
Listen.
Sure.
Listen. I just say that's better than introducing a character out of nowhere. We can't even tell what the hell he looks like.
Well, okay. So sure enough, it's obviously a brother of Balon. I won't say any more. His name's in IMDb if you want to go get it. And these brothers pretty much get into a fight. The older brother, Balon, says, I heard you lost your mind and, you know, you cut off all your sailors' tongues. And he's like, I needed some quiet. And so, yeah, this guy looks like Theon an awful lot. And pretty much the brothers fight here on this rope bridge in the storm. Long story short, brother throws Balon over all five kings. In the War of Five Kings, gone, Catfish.
Is this, are we just setting up, are we like, okay, we're going to get rid of Ramsay soon, the psycho, so we got to set up yet another psycho?
Catfish, I don't want to say yes, but it's the opposite of no. So sure enough, there's a pretty good effect shot as Balin dies a Disney cartoon death of falling into the vast abyss.
You would have thought.
Yeah.
After that happened, that you would not be able to find Balon. And yet, not only did they find him.
Yeah, he fell in a storm down the chasm.
He doesn't look that bad, to be honest with you.
Well, he always looked bad, though.
But I would have thought he would have been, let's just say, pulverized.
Oh, okay.
By the fall.
All right, sure. I see it. We cut to a funeral. Yara is very sad as she says goodbye to her father, who's going to feed the creatures of his watery kingdom. And yeah, you know, behind the scenes note, in the distance, you see that infamous isle that you see in so many scenes of the coast.
There it is.
There it is again. And so Yara starts saying, hey, once I'm in charge, things are going to get better. And this priest of the drowned god says, that's not how it works here, sister. Your father may have wanted you to be his heir. Hello. Smash Kraken. But no, the salt throne is decided by a king's moot. And so, yo boy,
right.
Well, who will she compete against the king's moot? Possibly her brother Theon, if he gets there. And maybe this uncle of hers who just killed her father.
Do you really honestly think that Theon is in any condition? Not to mention the fact that the last time any of these guys saw him, they basically bailed on him.
Yeah, screw
and the people from the Iron Islands, because he was just a shitty leader.
You mean Theon was?
Theon, that's...
Well, but if he can somehow show up, it's you know, Bob's your uncle. Hey, everybody, I'm back.
Oh.
You know... What people on Twitter have been saying, because the priest of the drowned god is like, you know, you could be the first female leader of the Iron Islands in history. People have been tweeting out the hashtag I'm with her.
Nice. Well, she does have her woman warrior card.
Right. Well, if her uncle says feel the burn, then you know.
Oh, man.
This is trying to be topical here. And so now let's get to it. We've delayed on Castle Black long enough. Let's go up to the wall, Catfish.
Boom. And this is this whole episode. That's why it deserves a 9.
Ooh. See, I disagree. I thought you didn't find this a bit anticlimactic that the wildlings came in and they just killed one person. Admittedly, they one just killed one person. And it was a great death. It was a great death.
I was surprised that more people did not die. Also, considering the fact that, I mean, there were some people who weren't happy with John, with John's death. Not all of them were lined up to kill these people, but how did they know? You would have to assume they'd have to put all the remaining guys at the wall in jail. Do they have jails big enough?
Yeah. Somebody, well, I don't know. Somebody said Ollie should have died, though. That was somebody in Periscope telling us. In my opinion, call me crazy, call me irresponsible. I honestly think that it was anticlimactic. The fact that you could have these wildlings, I guess I loved it as a moment when the men at Castle Black saw what happened with the giant and then just drop their swords and say, okay, we're good.
Well, one guy did. It was the problem after. One guy did try and do it, and he got kind of taken like a rag doll.
He sure as hell did. But you think Ghost is going to fight? You're building up for this great moment. And I have to say, I did in my own mind know that they weren't going to break through the door, and that as the door was getting thumped, suddenly you would hear the thump on the walls of Castle Black. But I was ready for a battle. And if it was going to be this anticlimactic, once again, in my own words, I think they should have put this moment in last week's episode. Last week's episode was relatively short, and so I thought it would have kind of built well. I know they want to end with, old Melisandre's kind of 2001 going to bed time. But so anyway, the wildlings come in. Everybody, 1-1 the giant, is totally a boss. He's like a boss. He gets shot with an arrow.
A piece of paper. Somebody threw a piece of paper on top of me.
Oh, and this guy. Oh, he dies the worst way. But it does lead to the funny moment where everybody drops their weapons. I don't know. I found it anticlimactic. You tell me. You defend it. You gave the episode a 9. What is so great about it, about this particular part of it?
Well, this particular part about it, I'm a little, I can't really defend it. I would have expected there to be a full fight. I wouldn't expect, you know, even the people who were for John,
right,
who weren't part of the group defending him, would fight against the wildlings coming in.
Yeah, Ollie
so
did.
I can't imagine people.
Ollie charged. Ollie was like a mini boss. Oh, I want to call him like a boss, but it'd be like, boss.
He was like a mini boss.
And so now he's thrown in jail. What do you think's going to happen with Alistair Thorne and Ollie? Are they going to be in these cells for the rest of the season? Are they going to, you know, now that they see John arisen, are they going to be like, okay, my bad. You know what? I made a mistake once. One time I made a mistake,
once.
Commander Snow.
Once. It's curious because, again, we have not gotten to this part in the books.
No. This is something a lot of people have been suspecting, like you said. And Tormund's looking at Jon's corpse saying, it took a lot of knives, and I'll build wood for a fire.
Tormund's like, if you'd only slept in a Radisson, you would be okay.
It's a Wyndham, Catfish.
The Wyndham.
Oi, edit. Shame bell. Shame bell.
Shame.
You
I'm
get
sorry.
Points for Radisson, Catfish.
Don't know what. Somebody made a good point.
Yeah, what they
on
said.
On Periscope, they said John will release them, but only after he orders them not to kill him again.
Alistair Thorne doesn't break orders.
As long as you make that clear.
Clear. Crystal
you're okay.
Clear.
You're
Amen.
Okay. Good point. You know what? We have the smartest Periscope of viewers.
Okay, so then we get, the next time we're back at Kessel Black, Melisandre's still
double
down
M.
in the double M.
Mopey Melisandre.
Yeah, I was going to say she's double D.
Double D.
Down dumps.
Oh, I thought you were going to say something about her double D.
Hey now, catfish. Okay. So why?
Both bells.
So why does this feels like it's a bit out of the blue? Why does Davos suddenly come to Melisandre?
Right. Sir Knuckles. You know what? I wish we. Well, I mean, we have spent a lot of time with Sir Knuckles, yeah. But he is becoming clearly more and more central to this story.
Yeah, and he's and I like him more.
Right?
I've always kind of liked him, but I like him more now.
John.
Yeah.
He's got this idea, even though he tried to kill Melisandre, which he reminds her of.
Yep.
He is like, look, I'll try this. Let's give it a shot. When did we see him last year really come to appreciate and respect John on the show?
They did have a great scene in season 5 where Ollie was there too, everybody, where Davos was like, read me back the Night's Watch Oath, da-da-da-da-da. Oh, yeah, protect the realms of men. He's like, you know, I think protecting the realms of men, how can you protect them with the Boltons controlling the North? You could do more than sitting up here at the edge of the world. Now, of course, John... Even before this was before Hardhome, so he still knew about the threat of the North. But theoretically, they at least kind of saw eye to eye there, I guess, is what you'd say. But yeah, somehow, why didn't he? He's coming to Melisandre now. He's like, you've got powers to bring
him
back.
Davos.
Why didn't Davos go to Melisandre and say, you tell me there was trouble with Stannis and something? You can't use any powers to get them back? You know? Hey,
yeah.
Use your powers. Let's get everybody back.
Yeah, I it's still unclear to me. Why Davos at this point isn't like, well, you know what? This has been a good run, but I'm going to go to Dorne because I hear it's a great vacation spot.
I hear there are not many men
left. Beach.
Davos was like, I hear there are not many men left in Dorne. I think my odds are pretty good.
The ladies are very strong. I like the strong ladies.
Now, of course, if you remember back to season 2, Davos told Melisandre, don't make fun of my wife. So he doesn't think about his wife too much. In the show, Davos doesn't. But Davos is like, listen, seven gods, drowned gods, tree gods, it's all the same. Can you bring him back? I don't see how he suddenly thought about this, but he says, you know, I've seen you perform what he calls are miracles. Let's do it. And Melisandre?
She's another double D.
Double D.
Down in the dumps. She is super down in the dumps. I mean, I've never seen her this shaken before.
No.
But you know what? She decides, what the heck? Give it a shot.
Let's roll the dice. Let's see if it works. Said it at the beginning of the podcast. I'm going to say it again. Call me crazy. I needed something more miraculous. I needed Beric Dondarrion.
The spa treatment?
First, I'm going to take the loofah and I'm going to wipe it across your chest.
Yeah.
Then we're going to do some hot stones. But maybe when this happened, Catfish, I'll give a little behind the scenes. When this happened,
okay,
I said to you, I said, there's no way this can work.
What? And why is that?
Because it seemed too easy to me. I was like, there is no way that this could work. And, you know, she took him to Supercuts, and then she said some words. And then it's just a fail, and everybody...
Well, what's interesting is you would think that no matter what she believes, it's the power of her belief that would make it work. And right now, she's at the lowest part, so it's kind of surprising.
Mm-hmm.
Well, but someone in Holly Hunpan says both Thoros and Mel lost their faith in Roller before bringing back...
In Rallor.
Yeah, Roller.
Right, the...
Roller.
Yes, she
Roller.
Did. But I know, Holly, I'll address this to you. I'll address this to everybody. I know in season 3, it really just felt like you saw Theros praying over Beric Dondarrion. And then the next thing you know, he's standing up again. But this, call me crazy, I wanted something.
Crazy.
I wanted something more. I wanted something, somebody in Periscope just said, maybe if the ruby on her necklace had lit up or something. I needed, you know, him to be placed on the pyre and then suddenly sit up and say, hey,
maybe if they broke into song.
anything more powerful than there is, I guess, a bit of a cryptic moment where Ghost seemingly has gone to sleep, and then Ghost wakes up and goes to John, and then a second after Ghost wakes up, John wakes up. Obviously, there's some parallel there, you would say?
Absolutely.
Well, what do you think that implies then? You say absolutely. Well, that's great.
Oh no, well, I think, as you would say, these animals are even more connected than other animals are. But whenever my girlfriend comes home,
yeah,
our dog knows before I do. He knows
okay.
the car.
Oh, now, you know what? I like that.
Car,
I like that.
He doesn't
that.
Recognize her. So he feels the spirit coming back into John
okay.
before it's fully back.
Boy, you know, Catfish, I like that a lot. I like that a lot.
Okay.
So, hey, we've said our piece. We want you to go to us on Twitter. Catfish, how can people talk to you about this second episode, this resurrection, home, Jon Snow's back? How can people talk to you on Twitter?
They can hit me up at CJGman67, forever crushing that fool CJGman66.
And if you want to talk to me, my name is Bubba. You can find me on Twitter at Fit and Trim. That's FitenTrim, at Ooh, Fit and Trim on Twitter.
That's a lot of ends.
It is. So Catfish, we're going to end today's first podcast of the week.
By, as we always do.
We're going to end it as we always do by reading the new iTunes reviews because they're so thankful.
We usually start on those, but okay. We have got three new reviews this week.
Well, four if you count Catfish, and five you include Stitcher. So why don't
I didn't include Stitcher.
I'm going to read one, a new one from Australia, that wonderful Isle of Australia.
Okay, great.
It's our good friend Kremen2 who gives us 5 stars, King Joffrey, my best man.
Oh, yeah. He's bringing it.
He's bringing it. So Kremen2 writes, the best man in the whole damn show. That's Joffrey, all right.
He
should have said King Joffrey, Kremen2. He says, and the Joffrey podcast is the best podcast about him and the lesser people in Game of Thrones. Easy to listen to, fun to laugh at, especially tonight. At the lesser characters, the Joffrey podcast is a lot of fun, and I'm not saying that because I'm desperate to win a prize in a competition that may or may not be running. It's running, Kremen2.
It is happening. We've got like 5 gifts so far.
Oh man, we got so many people entered too. So you gotta enter every way you can, people. He says, I'm not saying that because I'm desperate to win a prize in a competition that may or may not be running. If you're going to listen to one podcast this year, well, don't be silly. To listen to as many as you can, but make sure this is one. Peter from Australia. Thank you, Kremen2. Thank
yeah, yeah.
you so much.
Well, we can call him
or
Peter
should
now.
I say, good day, Kremen2. It's oh, Foster's for
you
really cool shouldn't. Listener.
You really shouldn't.
I really should. The Great Isle of Australia. You call that a podcast? Crocodile D. Dundee callback. All right. So, Catfish, why don't you read some of these new iTunes reviews, including one from somebody I'm really excited to hear, Girl 600 Podcast. Let's hear it.
Yeah. The title of this review is Season 6.1 Newbie.
Thank you very much.
And then there are a variety of emoticons, which I'm struggling to find the sense to. There's a That's trophy, bow and arrow, looks like a sake a bowl and glass. And then I don't know what else it is. But she says, today is my first time ever listening to your podcast.
Oh, thank you so much. I want to wring the shame. You've only listened to it. You're new to listening to it. You got to listen always.
It is now Season 6, Episode 1. I like you too.
Oh, thank you.
I'm currently listening in bed, eating a pre-dinner bowl of cereal.
All right.
I approve. I listen to it on my drive home through our nation's capital as well.
Heck yeah, Philadelphia.
Just kidding to say I like the show.
Okay.
Sounds very crisp and clear on my Bose Bluetooth speaker, I might
add. Is this an ad for Bose Bluetooth speakers?
Are they going to send us money now?
I know. Like we need ads. Okay, let's
see. Love and miss my king.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe Cersei can have a dream with him in it.
Ooh.
Long live Joffrey and Cersei. Not sure about Tommen.
Ooh.
Is the mountain alive somewhere with one leg? Girl 600 out.
Thank you so much, Girl 600. You are entered into our contest. Love it.
Oh, my goodness. Okay, we've got another one.
Another
one. A great and funny GOT podcast by
Thank
Maddening.
You. Thank you so much, Maddening.
The last episode was over 2 hours long
Aye.
And too short.
Thank you.
It's that good.
Yeah.
Keep up to date and subscribe.
Heck
Did
yeah.
anyone notice the sand snakes were on the dock last season when Jaime and Marcella left with the prince, yet two of them are on the boat and kill the Prince of King's Landing? Or am I wrong?
You're
you
never
are not wrong.
You're never
completely
wrong.
Right about that.
Completely
that was
right.
one thing that I wanted to say, but it was
yeah.
another thing where I thought maybe I missed something
oh,
and Bubba would
it.
Yell at me.
We know. We talked about it. We talked about it in last week's podcast. Theoretically, the way you would have to assume this anyway makes sense, because in one episode, Jaime and company are on the boat in Dorne. The next episode, they're in King's Landing. Is theoretically that happens, and then several weeks later, the events where Jon Snow gets got at the wall happens.
Right, but they show the boat. It's out there in the middle. There's no other boat around, and then the sand snakes are not wet like they swam there. A little confusing.
They just took a second boat, which moved faster. Is the only way it could possibly work. They didn't show us that because. Let's move on. We got a third new one in the USA iTunes store. Catfish, let's hear it.
All right. It says, great reviews of Game of Thrones episodes by Black-Eyed Lily.
Thank you, Black-Eyed Lily.
If you're looking for new podcasts among the many that are reviewing the Game of Thrones episodes, you have come to the right place.
Yeah.
Bubba and Catfish put together a very entertaining program that adds their unique sense of humor together with solid knowledge of the Song of Ice and Fire books.
That's all five kingdoms.
That's your part that the series is based on.
Right.
They also share a background in the film industry, which gives them an interesting understanding to evaluate the show from production status.
No, thank you.
The chemistry between the two and their interaction with other Game of Thrones fans, and you have a recipe for a great listen.
Thank you so much, Black Eyed Lily. Our final new review comes from Stitcher. It's five stars, and it says, the place for Joffrey Love and Pycelle impersonations. Now, I want to say this Stitcher review, we love reviews on Stitcher. It's by Anonymous. So, Anonymous, if you win a prize at the end of the season, you won't win a prize. How am I going to give a prize to an Anonymous? So, You got to get in the game, Anonymous. You got to tell us who you are. But let's read your review because it's so wonderful. He said, I had no idea I needed two chucklers named Catfish and Bubba who loved Joffrey in my life. And you probably don't either. But now I know the truthiness. Then I started binging on these podcasts. Then I woke up from a confusing fever dream to their Candle in the Wind Joffrey Memorial Tribute.
That's a great episode
of the podcast. Everybody download the Joffrey Memorial Tribute. It's so fun. Now I listen to Bubba and Catfish in moderation. And I'm living day to day. Thank you so much, Anonymous.
Keeping it together.
So, once again, that is one of the multiple ways you can enter the contest. You can either tweet at us or tweet out the hashtag JoffreyPodcast. It's the second way. The third way is to go to our Facebook page. We love the discussions there. It's facebook.com/DoublePPodcast. That's DoublePPodcasts. Double P Podcast.
And don't forget, we're going to have another episode later on in the week where we're just giving this a test out to separate our review.
Yeah, to keep it under 3 hours.
to handle some interactions with our great fans, which we
are double L's.
You will be double L's?
Loyal listeners.
Oh, man, I always forget that. Okay, but before we go, our last final bit that we always have to do here on the Joffrey Podcast.
It's our Joffrey of the Week. And Catfish, you went first last week, so you are used to going first. Let's hear your Joffrey of the Week this week.
There can be only one Joffrey of the Week.
Oh, I can't wait. Let's hear it.
No other character represented the undying quality of Joffrey.
Jon Snow?
Than Jon Snow.
Ooh.
So Jon Snow, although he comes from a very weak bloodline.
Yes.
A weak, treacherous, and foolhardy bloodline.
Oh, for sure.
He is, because he came back from death.
Right.
He is my Joffrey of the Week.
Okay, Cat.
How about you, Bubba?
Catfish, I know you just said a second ago that only one can show the. Well, how did you phrase it?
There can be only one?
Right, yes. And then the next part was the. Fighting death. Only someone can strong enough to fight death.
Yes.
And that's Jon Snow. Well, my Joffrey of the Week, I gave out one nominee, but my actual winner this week is someone who's proven, just like Joffrey, they can fight death, and it is the Mountain / who
died. The freaking Mountain.
So you remember Joffrey in season one. He got that heckler, and he said, which do you prefer, your fingers or your tongue? The Mountain decided to make the choice for his victim. Rather than give him a choice like Joffrey would have, the Mountain said, hey, I'm going to use your tongue into this wall. And so the Mountain just like dispensed some what I like to call double J.
Double J.
Joffrey Justice.
I knew it. I knew that one.
And he took out that heckler. And so just like His Grace King Joffrey, it was wonderful.
I love it. I love it.
Okay, so that's it. For our episode recap later in the week, we're going to have our feedback podcast where we answer all the great tweets. We talk about the stuff people have been writing on the Facebook page. We talk about the feedback of this wonderful episode. So until a couple days from now, edit. All right. So You'll hear us next time on
The Joffrey of Podcasts.